Hello, everyone, and welcome to another close of the week here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola mostly, and we've also got Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
Brett Ehrlich, who will be played by Werner Herzog for the rest of the show.
It's great to be here, that's John. Very Brett, happy to share these times with you.
Brett, your shot looks a little bit different. Is your lighting different? You look different.
I'm wearing Justin Bieber's hoodie is the only difference.
That's probably what it is. He's gonna want that back.
My hair for once looks moderately kempt on your television
program.
That's
true.
And I have my mug that I made.
That is funny. Hello, audience. I'm sure you're all glad to see that Brett and I are not matching so that you can tell us apart once again. That's good. Heads up to the audience. I don't know how this show is going to go. I'm glad that a prince hasn't died because I just can't handle anything right now. And I thought I could handle stuff last week and I couldn't. So I'm more worried now. So we're gonna see what happens. The producers are already horrified at what this is likely to be like. But anyway, thank you for being here. We've got this program. I'm also gonna be doing the first hour of the Young Turks with Bridget Todd later on, which is exciting because Bridget Todd's awesome. Brett, what else is going on the network on this Friday?
Well, we have an amazing common room planned for you tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. It is myself and a lot of people, except for John, who are responsible for a lot of the stuff that's going to be happening during our Earth Day special, everyone. So it's kind of an Earth Day behind the scenes of what is going into the special that John's going to be hosting. We've got Asher, we've got Tamara from Shop TYT is gonna show us some of the merch. And then we've Julie is gonna be on. So we got a really fun show planned. And the best part about it is how good it's gonna be.
That's top five best things about it. I was supposed to be on it, but as of right now in the place I just moved into, I don't have internet. And in theory, I will. But have you ever dealt with Spectrum, world? Do you want to bet money that I'll have internet tonight? Anyway, so I just decided not to screw Common Room over at the last minute. Instead, I would screw them over way before the last minute. So yeah,
more of a penultimate. Right. He definitely agreed to do it at some point, then back down.
I did. I thought I would have internet at that point. Anyway, thank you everybody for being here. Those of you who are still here, which is probably not that many of you. Please hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already so that people know we're live because we're about to launch into the news and it is going to be something. Let me tell you that. But along the way, we are gonna have some fun as well. Pat Robertson gets woke, that's fun. Twitter has lost one person and we've lost nothing. So we're gonna figure out that riddle for you later on. Someone has returned to Twitter. And that is a story we're gonna do. Buckle up, hold on to your butts, we're gonna do it. And then at the end of the show, we're gonna be throwing some people in the trash. I think, but I'm not sure, that my garbage person of the week is the first time that this person will have been garbage person of the week. I'm not sure. And Brett, I don't know who yours is, so I'm very excited for that. Anyway, Brett, with that said, are you ready to do this thing?
Yes, sure, why not?
Okay, I can't come up with any reasons, so we might as well. Let's do it. In a couple weeks span of some absolutely devastating stories of police brutality amidst the ongoing Derek Chauvin trial, we have a standout in police brutality stories for you. It involves the fatal shooting of Adam Toledo, a 13-year-old. Yesterday, Chicago released video footage of the actual shooting more than 2 weeks after Adam was killed during a foot chase in the Little Village neighborhood. Adam's a seventh grader at Gary Elementary School, had been missing for several days before he was finally returned home on the night of March 28th. And so we have a photo of him. Now this story stands out, not because it's probably a needless killing by the police. That's so many stories like that, but shootings of 13-year-olds, Jesus. I mean, that is just, for as long as police brutality killings like this have been tracked, it is still one of the standouts. It's not the youngest. I found stories of 2 6-year-olds that had been killed, but this is devastating. And we have the footage. We're not showing you the footage, by the way. It has been made available and it certainly is available. So we have an inconsistent policy on that, but I just can't do it, can't take it. You can see the footage if you want. Brett, I don't know if you had seen it yesterday, if the main show covered it at that point. But let me know what you think.
I've seen it. I can tell you that when a cop shoots a 13-year-old, that is a tragedy for all the reasons that should immediately spring to mind. Like, how is a 13-year-old in a position where they are shot by a cop? This is sad. This is depressing. And I think, the mayor of Chicago has the best angle and take on it. There are people who, immediately dive into their own angles on it that they feel will best support. They triangulate, like, what can I say? How can I say it in a way that allows me to still cater to my audience? And all of them, frankly, make me sick today. No matter what side of the spectrum you are on politically, people on both sides are using this. I mean, I would prefer to spend more time talking about police running after people in the dark and less time like on the two freeze frames. There's two freeze frames being passed around right now about this. The first freeze frame is a kid with what looks like a gun in his hand. Before he turns around. And then there's a second freeze frame of a kid without a gun in his hand after he turns around. And most people agree on this. Most people are like, let's talk about a situation that leads to a 13-year-old in a back alley dying at the hands of the police. But a lot of other people are like, he never had a gun. And a lot of people are like, he totally always already had a gun. And I think we can all have a serious conversation about policing and about this particular situation without doing this really gross, grifty thing that everyone seems to be doing today.
Yeah, I will say I haven't absorbed nearly as much of that as you, because in the same way that I just can't take playing or watching the video after all of what we've seen in other stories recently, I've tried to avoid most of the response. In searching through the news as we do every night and every morning, I did come across some of it. I've got one or two little tidbits of that later on. But yeah, and the whole thing just feels like you're describing the current state of the conversation. But like, we also have been through so many iterations of this that I already know, if you were to manipulate little bits of the story, exactly what the response would be. And it's just what's obviously lost for most people is a 13-year-old dying. Like, Brett, do you even remember being 13? Like, yes. How many memories you do? You have memories?
Well, I'll say this. Yeah, I do have memories of being 13. Absolutely. Very, very many memories of being 13 years old. It is when you are now official. Like, I'm from the San Fernando Valley, and knowing a lot of people who are having bar mitzvahs, and they're always like, now you're a man, but you're still 13 and your voice still cracks. You're not by any means a man. But I will say that, like, this kid did not have the childhood that most people get to have in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Just because we're talking about his childhood, can I jump ahead to these two graphics where Elizabeth Toledo, mother, is talking about Adam. Says he had a big imagination and curiosity since he was a little baby. He was goofy and always cracking jokes, making everyone laugh. He loved animals and riding his bike. He sounds a lot like most kids. She says Adam was really into zombies and the zombie apocalypse. He even had this zombie apocalypse bag packed and ready to go. Some of his favorite movies and TV shows were Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, Ghostbusters, SpongeBob SquarePants, Toy Story, Cars, The Walking Dead. Wow, really? He's watching The Walking Dead? Yeah, I guess he's 13. His palate favorite, Taco Bell, pizza, chicken wings, chips, and candy. So already I can see about 50% overlap in me and him being the exact same person effectively. And it's just devastating. And the footage is out now. Years ago, in advance of body cams being so common, I, in one of the many ways that I am stupid, believed, oh, well, that'll clean things up. But no. As you're pointing out, even having the footage, you can go in multiple different ways. For me, like, I don't know his hands were up. I don't know what.
No,
I don't know what you're supposed to do sometimes.
Here's exactly what happened. Okay, I'm gonna say exactly what happened, but it'll reveal, the point of my thing is to reveal the truth in what you said, is you thought it would clean everything up. But I will say, here's what I think happened, and I'm just some schmuck. But the kid is being pursued down a dark alley at night. It seems like he had a gun in his waistband. He thought it was, when he saw an opening in the fence, that it was the perfect opportunity to take the gun out and, while spinning around, drop it behind the fence and turn around with his hands up, hoping the cop would not find the gun. What this reveals to me is, like, they both made split second decisions, right? It was literally, it was 0.8 of a second, the whole act. The cop was saying, show me your hands, do all that stuff. The kid is dead because they both were in a position where this all went down very, very fast. And listen, I've seen tons of police body cam footage. And if you're looking, I mean, the true takeaway is that frequently the body cam footage gives us as viewers more of an idea of what happened and a clearer picture morally of who should be held responsible for making bad decisions. We saw a police officer mistake a taser for a gun. I watched that. I believe that she did that. I also believe that even though it's a mistake, it's technically a mistake, like, wow, you're gonna tase someone behind the wheel of a car that was about to pull off? Is this the smartest move even? But it is better to have the evidence than not to have the evidence. And when we watch videos like this, we should be, the more we see, the more we can pull together a very realistic idea of what policing is. And what not only the police go through, but the people who are being pursued by the police, whether actively in a back dark alley, or just while they're going about their normal business, having done nothing wrong, still feeling and being pursued by the police, pulled over for no reason. And we can still, you won't get like a gratifying, what do you want? Like, watch this video and get a gratifying ending? It's not gonna happen. This is a 13-year-old's dead, a cop shot him. The goal should be, how do we get a better idea of what's happening in these neighborhoods and the way police act and the way people have to act in order to make it better? And that's not going to be easy or make you feel better.
I think in theory, the gratifying ending is it being so obvious that justice will be unavoidable. And that has been proven to be impossible. It doesn't matter what the footage, whether in this story or another story, shows. Footage can come out showing that someone was on their knees, had no weapon, was surrounded by cops, and they decided to just shoot him. That doesn't actually fix the situation. Having footage of someone on someone's neck for 9 minutes, it's never enough. It's never enough. And that's the frustrating thing. The thing is, just cops are trained to be terrified and to use lethal force when they're terrified. And I understand when the cop makes the decision not to shoot, you know, we don't generally see those. They don't become national stories. So I understand that, but it does seem like we are a standout internationally in making the decision to shoot. With the idea being that cops are trained to think, no, people are like totally casual about killing cops. That's a decision that lots of people will make. And so you should be terrified of them making that very common decision all the time. And so they're trained to do what they do. In this story, in a lot of stories. And the thing is, you cannot separate implicit racism from this. Like, cops experience people with guns all the time. And we know they do not see all these situations the same. I don't know, maybe this is a version of what you were talking about earlier, but like, we have the photo of Kyle Rittenhouse. When Kyle Rittenhouse had just shot and killed multiple people, he's walking around with a long gun, his hand ready to shoot. The cops are not terrified. They're not scared. They're not telling him to put the gun down because they look at him and think, oh, he's not gonna kill a cop. Come on. I mean, sure, he just murdered people, but he's not gonna kill a cop. Or you might say some of the cops that saw him that time didn't know that he was the one that had just killed multiple people. But they're not terrified of him with an assault rifle. But sometimes having something that conceivably looks like a gun is enough to say, oh no, that's definitely a gun. And that person, if I let my guard down for a split second, that person will murder a cop, because that's a thing that tons of people do all the time. That's a problem. It's not a problem just of one story, but it's a problem across a lot of these stories.
It's and that is racism. Like when you define racism, that's it. They see a white kid, and it's also like hockey. Like that guy's equipment's more expensive. Like sure. The guy with the enormous assault rifle. There's even like classism built into that, where this guy can buy a giant assault rifle. So I guess it's fine. That should be scarier. That's a giant gun that Kyle Rittenhouse had. Whether you know that he killed people with it before that or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they're not gonna drop him. And the reason is cops of all races are like, well, I've seen a lot of black people that I've arrested. And that's a white kid, so he's closer to what my, you know, white people are like, that's my son.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a million subconscious assumptions that you make without realizing it about what is likely to happen. What is the like if I'm seeing a thing, what's the explanation of what I'm seeing? What's the motivation? We project motivations onto people in ways that we don't understand all of what goes into that equation.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Sean Hannity said, "We are awaiting the release this hour, this is yesterday, of Chicago police body cam footage that captured the fatal police shooting of a young 13-year-old man by the name of Adam Toledo." What is that? A young 13-year-old man? Is that an Onion parody of the way they treat black kids as adults and more threatening than they are? He said 13-year-old man.
It's crazy.
That's just crazy. Is that a slip in some way? Like,
I mean,
it's Sean Hannity, so it's definitely in his teleprompter, right? Like, somebody wrote that in. A person wrote down 13-year-old man, and then he read it, and then didn't immediately go, "Wait, that's weird. Who wrote that in?" 13's not close to the borderline.
Yeah, I mean, yes. My defense, if I'm going, so here's the full thought process. There's a term that's like young man. It was a young man. And he may have interjected the age in the middle of the term young man. Okay, if it's anybody that I meet on the street, maybe that's what they did. But Sean Hannity at every turn always finds ways like this to turn everything on its head and suddenly kind of imply through simple turns of phrase that they kind of had it coming to them. And a lot of people who are pointing out that tweet or that statement from Hannity are also pointing out where they're like, you know, Trump pointing out and Hannity saying, you know, Don Jr. is a good kid. He's a good kid. He's 42. I don't know how old he is, but it's something like that. It's nuts.
This story is devastating, obviously, because of his age. We've had multiple devastating stories like this, simultaneous stories of mass shootings and stories of police brutality. Nothing fundamentally has changed. This is the country we were a week ago and a month ago and a year ago and a decade ago. We produce stories like this, but sometimes they just all hit at the same time. And it's just devastating. It's just devastating. And then as has become sort of cliched on the damage report to say, like, it's like you get hit with the news and then it's just like the, I guess it's like a, it's muscle memory. Like, you know everything that's gonna be said about it. And you just can't take hearing all of it said that way about it again. And you like experienced apparently a lot of it earlier today. I had to avoid it just because I can't take it right now to see us go through. It would be one thing if it was just pointless, like thoughts and prayers or something. But when it's aggressive and hostile, the like cyclical response to stories like this, I just can't take it. Crowdfunding has been a big thing in America for a long time. It can produce some good. People who desperately need help can get it. It can also reveal quite a bit about who we are and who our public servants are. And The Guardian has an amazing story breaking down this data breach of a Christian crowdfunding website that revealed that serving police officers and public officials have donated money to fundraisers for accused vigilante murderers, far-right activists, and fellow officers accused of shooting Black Americans. None of this fundamentally is crazy surprising. But it's pretty widespread, and I want to show you a couple of instances of this. First of all, the reason we know who these people are is because often the donations are attached to their official email addresses, their official public email addresses. So that certainly raises questions about the use of public resources, or at least public time. If you are logged into your official like cop email and you're donating these things. Anyway, the beneficiaries of donations from public officials include Kyle Rittenhouse, of course, who stands accused of murdering two left-wing protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin last August. According to data from the site, he raised $586,940 between the 27th of August last year and the 7th of January, which is, again, I guess, Brett, not surprising that he would be able to raise a lot of money, but that is an absurd amount of money. I mean, what percentage of cancer crowdfunding gets to that much? What percentage of victims of shootings get to that much? But the perpetrator raised more than $500,000.
It's so weird when you think of how much, how many better like causes there are for that. Like, and didn't they someone pay for his? And this is just from that site, by the way.
Yeah, that's from, I forget the name, but that's from one crowdfunding site.
And just the, I can't identify with the instinct to say, oh, in the wake of people being shot and killed, to be like, all right, let's get that kid. Let's back that kid who did the shooting and the killing. Mm-hmm. And a lot, you can see they're just like, I'm gonna put my partisan goggles on and log on to this website and give money in during a pandemic to Kyle Rittenhouse, who is not like wasting away in jail. We've seen him making white supremacist hand gestures in a bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those things. And by the way, we're gonna have some more dark details from the story in a second. But the point I wanna make is, sometimes I think it's important for us to face dark truths about our country and the people that live in it. There were a lot of them during the pandemic that we had to face. One of them was, an answer to the question whether we'd ever vocalized or not. Will we, in our darkest hour, pull together? And the answer was like, maybe some of us, but not all of us. And some of us, in fact, will do everything we can to undercut the effort. So that was pretty dark. The other is the realization that there are people, lots and lots of people, who really want to see people like Kyle Rittenhouse go and kill protesters. There are definitely people who will do it. Some of them are cops. We saw lots of footage of cops brutalizing people, trying to run them down. But more importantly, for every one of those, there's 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 people who just kind of want to see it. And in fact, are willing to donate money to the people who do this thing that they want. And in hindsight, perhaps we shouldn't be too shocked. I mean, these people are trained on Fox to dehumanize the protesters, to believe that it's all fundamentally illegitimate. Everything that those BLM protesters are protesting about is made up. It's not true. And in fact, they're terrorists and they're gonna come for you. So what do you know? You end up with a population that likes seeing people at these protests get killed. And so that is, I think, pretty dark, but I think it is true. And I think it's important to know what at least a percentage of the American people is really about.
Yeah. I can't with this. Like,
I know.
And you're right. Like, you kind of, I know what everyone's going to say. You know, it's like Groundhog Day, right? When there's a line in Groundhog Day where Bill Murray says something to the effect of, maybe God doesn't have superpowers, maybe he's just been around so long, he knows everything. Yeah. Like, we've been in the media landscape for long enough to know that when something like this happens, most Americans, I would say this, this is what goes underreported and underemphasized, if you ask me. Most Americans look at it and go, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. It's horrible that some kid just went and shot these protesters. Yeah. Went to a different state to shoot those protesters. And most people are like, God, that's terrible. Or at least most people have the decency to say, like, people died, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Even if they're not like, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse shouldn't have shot them, but like they would think people died, that's not a good thing. But there's a, and that goes underreported, but there's definitely people out there who say, I can definitely cater to a small audience by being polemic for no reason, by being wildly partisan and at all times hypocritical, by just choosing a side.
Yeah.
And then they just hammer that down, and that crazy monster breeds $500,000 for Kyle Rittenhouse. Because they're not really into finding out what happened, the full story, anything like that. Yet they'll still say, do your research. How come you don't know all that stuff? These memes I saw absolutely prove a fact to me that I should give money to Kyle Rittenhouse. And it emboldens people, like, it doesn't embolden the decent and the sane, and the, not sane, but the decent and the rational. It emboldens the indecent and the irrational. And that's the most frustrating, and so frustrating. And what makes it even more frustrating is how obvious it is that this is what's happening.
Yeah. Oh, I want to give one other detail. There was a donation for $25 made on the 3rd of September last year, made anonymously, sort of. I mean, when you're logged into your official email address and you don't hide it, it's not really anonymous. That's a good tip for crowdfunding, as well as Venmo payments to prostitutes. Sergeant William Kelly, who currently serves the Executive Officer of Internal Affairs of the Norfolk Police Department in Virginia, gave that donation. That donation isn't nearly as bad as the message that accompanied it, which is, God bless, thank you for your courage, keep your head up, you've done nothing wrong, every rank and file police officer supports you. Don't be discouraged by actions of the political class of law enforcement leadership.
And here's the, and the hypocrisy in that statement is, at the same time, they'll look at Dante Wright and say, hey man, you shouldn't have gotten yourself in that position in the first place. What about Kyle Rittenhouse? You're never gonna say you shouldn't have gotten yourself in that position in the first place. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but it was unavoidable. I mean, he would have had to not cross state lines with a gun he shouldn't have had, and patrol an area that he didn't know and didn't belong in. I mean, that's impossible. Yeah, and the thing is, I don't even know to what extent that comment is wrong. Every rank and file police officer supports you. Sure, it's definitely not everyone, but we really want to know what percentage it is that don't mind the vigilantes. Just terrifying. The fact that they do the fundraiser for the far right activists doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, clearly those people are always able to get funding when they need it, but when or even giving to fellow officers, sure. I mean, it sort of proves the myth of the, you know, bad apple, when so many people seem to like want to run to the bad apple's defense. But doing it for the only reason you know who Kyle Rittenhouse is because he needlessly started a chain of events that resulted in killing multiple people. It should be, if anything, a cautionary tale about a bunch of different things, but instead, cops in positions of power, like even inside of the police department in positions of power and authority, look at that and say, yeah, we need more people like Kyle Rittenhouse. And why shouldn't he? That's what the hosts on Fox were saying, that this is a good thing, that more people should be doing this. They were trying to get people to do stuff like that for months, and Kyle Rittenhouse was their great success. Remember Pat Robertson? You might not, actually. If you're young, if you live in certain parts of the country, you might not know who he is. But he's sort of a big deal for the Christian right. And it's sort of a, I don't know, like a touchstone of TYT that they used to talk about him a lot when he was even more significant culturally. But he was an interesting figure because he was almost always wrong and awful on the substance, but every once in a while would have a bit of empathy. And I think we've got a case of this here where Pat Robertson and his co-host talking about the killing of Dante Wright. And I want you to take a look at this as they talk about like the facts of the story as they were revealed to us.
Also, I want to say, you know, I think a lot of people are thinking like I was, that both the gun and the taser would be put on your dominant side, but it's not that way.
They have to cross where they have them on different.
So you actually have to reach across yourself.
Yeah,
to
you
get
feel the
taser.
Difference.
I yeah, mean, it's definitely
there's just no comparison. As I say, they're not making tasers in this yellow color anymore. They're making them in black. They're making them yellow. Now, how she made the difference was she shot that poor guy to death, saying, "This is what I thought. This is what I thought was my taser." And if you can't tell the difference in the feel of those things, it's crazy.
So, Brett, I want to give him credit for doing the comparison at all, which is more than we would get out of the vast majority of right-wing media. It's an inconvenient thing to try to get into the head of how you could make that mistake. And I understand that that, at the end of the day, is the most important part of what happened, clearly. But he at least cared enough to do it and produced a weird image of Pat Robertson holding simultaneously like akimbo taser and gun, which I never thought I would have seen. But what do you think? I know that you're a little bit more familiar with Pat Robertson than some.
I didn't know the Pat Robertson player could dual wield. I didn't know that was a possibility with that, that skin or whatever. The very droopy skin of I would just say for people on the right, this is just like the most difficult demonstration to avoid, the temptation. Because usually their default setting is, how can I hold as many lethal weapons as possible at once? And then be like, so we have this segment we can do where you can have a gun and a taser. And they're like, go on. But you'll have to conclude that they're basically the same thing. It's just like, oh God.
I want to hold it.
Order them. Bring them here. Bring them here. But we won't. We'll shoot it. We'll film it, but we won't air it. But please just leave them here. And how many days do we have this? You have to get all the charges, like all that stuff.
He did the right thing here. He is saying, I don't understand how you could confuse these things, which I think maybe I'm in a bubble. I don't know. I think that's the only reasonable conclusion, honestly.
Yeah, it's.
But anyway. More important than that, we'll do our commentary, but let me give you sort of his conclusion, which I would not have expected he would have come to.
Pro police, folks. I think we need the police. We need their servants, and they do a good job. But if they don't stop this onslaught, they cannot do this. You know, the police in Virginia picked up a lieutenant in the army and began to give him trouble. And our state police are highly trained. But why they don't stop this? And this thing is going on in Minnesota, but the Derek Chauvin, I mean, they ought to put him under the jail. He has caused so much trouble by kneeling on the death of George Floyd. It's just, I mean, on his neck. It's just terrible what's happening. And the police, why don't they open their eyes to what the public relations are? They've got to stop this stuff.
Maybe they need more training.
Now, Brett, there are some issues with that perhaps we can touch on. But overall, he seems to have a mix of a bit of empathy, a bit of shock that people could act the way they do, with a bit of like, I guess, sort of pragmatic PR advice for cops. Like, it was kind of stop doing this because it looks really bad for you. But there was empathy there too. It's a mix of a few different things.
And it's not a crazy conclusion. We shouldn't do this. The crazy conclusion is what we heard at the end from the co-host. The co-host is saying maybe they need more training. The word more is, I think, where everybody doesn't realize they're wrong. Let's say you're, this is going to be a terrible analogy, but like, let's say you're making soup and you put salt in it. You put too much salt in it. Mm-hmm. The cure for it is it more salt.
I think you're supposed to put a potato in there.
Supposed to put a potato in there. You're supposed to counteract it. You're supposed to actually put something in there to take it out. You have to fix it. You have to fix it. You can't just do more of the thing. A lot of people say, well, they should have more training. No. They need to change the way that they train people.
Yes.
And that's very frustrating, but.
That's not a bad analogy. I was worried at first, but that's not that bad. Right.
Well, it's just because I'm comparing police brutality to soup, I think is where we've really identified this all breaks down. That's
probably it.
But it's just a way of getting people to think about it differently. You're not gonna keep doing the thing that's wrong about it. Especially because the woman who shot Dante Wright was a training officer. The guy who accosted the veteran who accosted a black man walking around a neighborhood on the street was a drill sergeant.
Yeah,
in South Carolina, like these folks are the training sometimes. And so maybe that can reveal to you that they're doing it wrong. And for Pat Robertson to say, listen, you can't keep doing this. Pat Robert, it's weird. Maybe he's just been doing his own little show for long enough where he hasn't paid attention to the ways in which mainstream media has completely lost it. Mm-hmm. And has just decided, we're just gonna be hyperbolic. We don't care about being consistent. We're gonna be 100% hypocritical at all times. But even Pat Robertson's just like, I'm just looking at the facts of the matter and they seem to be bad for cops who were shooting and killing people or kneeling on their necks. Like that, like, you know, it's Pat Robertson. He's just kind of, he can't help but notice reality.
Sure. Yeah, and look, I am, by no means the person to ask about what relevance, if any, or if where he has over the right. I don't know. I don't know even for like really religious right wingers. I doubt he's super mainstream, but hey, we'll take the help wherever we can. If he is a thought leader for some people, him trying to inject a little bit of empathy and I would say consistency with the rest of their value system when it comes to this sort of thing, that's a good thing. I'll take it. And you know, with this new woke Pat Robertson, we want to welcome him to the club. Francesca started it actually on Twitter saying, welcome to Antifa, Pat Robertson snacks to your left. And yeah, so he's going to be at the meetings. He's a little bit weird, but you know, he's still trying to evolve. So let's be welcoming. He's actually generally pretty awful, and I'm sure tomorrow he's going to say awful stuff. So bear that in mind. James O'Keefe has been banned on Twitter. It is now permanent, and his ban comes just a few months after his group Project Veritas was thrown off Twitter for quote repeated violations of Twitter's private information policy. At the time, O'Keefe's account was also temporarily locked for violating the company's policy, but this time it is confirmed via Twitter spokesperson that it has been permanently suspended for violating the Twitter rules on platform manipulation and spam. Social media platforms specifically outlined how Twitter policy dictates that users can't mislead others on Twitter by operating fake accounts and that can't artificially amplify or disrupt conversations through the use of multiple accounts. Now, that's, I think, the most interesting one because many platforms have something like this. They almost never actually employ them, in particular against the right. There have been Judd Legum, who's been on the show multiple times, he has demonstrated how, especially on Facebook, they use these sort of bot networks of like automated reposting pages to artificially amplify the reach of right-wing articles, blog posts, content, stuff like that. That is explicitly against Facebook's guidelines, and it has been years that they've been doing it and they have never actually suffered any consequences. I don't know that this represents a systemic shift in that for Twitter, but at the very least, James O'Keefe and Project Veritas apparently have run afoul of it, and James O'Keefe is now permanently banned, Brett.
Yes, and it's not a ban because people don't like his politics. It seems to be a ban because he's breaking the rules of the network or of the social media network. And they're within their rights. That's a capitalist argument. That is a gay cake argument. Yep. That is a, hey, we have a policy that we follow here, and it is our First Amendment right as owners of a business to do whatever we want because we're not the government and you can't keep us here. And then also just from the legal standpoint, I'm sure the Twitter's terms of service is crafted to protect them from lawsuits. But it totally seems like James O'Keefe isn't gonna let that stop him. He and whoever's backing him are going to fight this in a hope to get some obviously monetary and PR based loot from it, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, they're actually suing for defamation over its claim that he operated fake accounts. His whole thing is fake accounts. Like,
and that's,
and by the way, some people might say, well, he's a journalist, doesn't he have to do that? No, Ken Klippenstein breaks stories every week. He doesn't have any fake accounts. He gets people to give him information, he publicizes it. That's, you could do that in theory, especially if the organizations you're targeting are things like CNN, where they have literally thousands of employees. In any event, they get to have standards. And if they're public, which they are, if you've been warned for past violations, which he has, you don't get to be super shocked when finally they do what they've been saying they would do for some time.
Yeah. And it's crazy how quickly these things, like, it seems to me that part of the reason that his things about him trend as so much bigger than other bits of news is kind of wrapped into the reason he's been banned. They do this. And if you see those Judd Legum things, they're amazing. It says here are Ben Shapiro's network does the same thing, where here are a bunch of tweets. Here's the policy that says you can't just like have a bunch of networks that you control retweet the same damn thing over and over again to game our system. And then Judd's just like, here's a bunch of screen caps of the same title, the same description. These are originating posts. Yeah. It's crazy. And people do it all the time. They pay off bot networks, and this is part of it. If they want to say that the best ideas win out, which is the central argument of people on the right, the ones they make all the time, why do they need robots to game that system? Shouldn't your ideas be fine on their own? And I don't know specifically about James O'Keefe's bot network or alleged bot network, but in general, that dynamic prevails all the time.
Yeah, you see it constantly. The Judd Legum shows on Facebook, like these supposedly independent right wing sites, like he'll show when the article is posted on, I don't know, I'll say Dan Bongino, I have no idea if it's Dan Bongino, but, and it's seconds later, it's instantly also pushed out on all these other things with the exact same messages and all that. And all of it is, it's artificial. It's not another one of his sites spreading. I think that you're totally allowed to do that in theory. It's the idea that this is a network, and it's not. It's all the same people. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see. I'm sure he's going to raise even more money off of having been canceled.
I will say this. Can we just have 1 second to talk about Project Veritas videos and how, if I'm to give my media satirical media criticism, it's like watching Ghost Adventures. It is. If anyone watches Ghost Adventures, they're like, oh God, and my wife's gonna come in because she loves Ghost Adventures. It's like Zach Baggins is a journalist, but she basically like they go with their like readings and they're like, oh gosh, there's ghosts here. And they're like, oh God, there's baby parts here. Oh, we have a real editorial champion from CNN here. It's the TD. Like that is a stressful job to have as a technical director. It is a very difficult job. And I'm not just saying that because Brandon can cut away from me at any moment. But he's not, they're not probably choosing should. The story.
Get TD owned, brat.
The reason I didn't tweet about this is like, it's true. Like the TD has 1,000,000,000 buttons in front of them. And without knowing how to do that, the entire thing caves in on itself. Yeah. In a giant newsroom, there's like 10 to 15 people in a room doing all this crazy stuff. That's that guy's very important job. Is he choosing the stories? No. Is he trying to get some from the person on his Tinder date to seem important? Yes. And that's it. And that's the equivalent of Zach Baggins going like, did you hear that? It's a ghost. Did you hear that?
I'm really worried about what happens when your wife responds. Anyway, and by the way, here it at least could be like that. Brandon can suggest stories anytime he wants. We have a Slack channel. We did a story yesterday because Bart posted a bunch of links about it. I don't think it's CNN that's probably happening. I don't think the hosts choose the stories. I think it's probably like the EP just gives them their script. Sean Hannity's probably not like, oh God, I gotta get this rundown down to a tight 60. Anyway. Just about 3 weeks ago, Twitter was rocked by its mayor, I think they call her, leaving Twitter. This was Chrissy Teigen, author of Cravings, which I own. It's actually a really good cookbook. Anyway, surprised fans last month when she announced that she would be departing Twitter for good, saying, quote, it no longer serves me as positively as it serves me negatively. And I think that's the right time to call something. Well, if you've ever tried to give up social media platforms and stuff like this, you might not be shocked to find out that about 3 weeks later, she is back. She has returned tweeting. Turns out it feels terrible to silence yourself and also no longer enjoy belly chuckles randomly throughout the day and also lose like 2,000 friends at once. LOL. I choose to take the bad with the good. So I assumed that Chrissy Teigen would come back. I thought that it would take a bit longer. Brett, what are your thoughts?
You only come back on Twitter with an announcement if you want you to say something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like she left, like you can still have those belly chuckles, my friend. You can still like have a ghost account and show up and read things if you want. Mm-hmm. You also have to admit that this is you wanting to be part of the conversation again, which is totally fine.
Yeah, that seems quite reasonable.
First of all, I do want to say like this was my pitch today. For main show. And earlier in the day, I'm like, whose cursor's by that? Hover over it, John Iadarola. We're not doing this on the main show today because John put it in this. I wanted to have the conversation though, and I'm glad that we're having it. I love that people are like, Chrissy Teigen's gone. And then Chrissy Teigen's back. Woo! Sure.
Well, and the opposite of that is happening too. Lots of people are attacking her, mocking her, and all that stuff. Which I get, she's a divisive figure on Twitter. I get that, like, she has huge fans and she has people that despise her. In particular, with political Twitter, she's traditionally not been a big fan of, like, Bernie Sanders and stuff like that. So that has caused a lot of people to, like, people get very invested in her on both sides, pro and con.
Yes. And there is no reason to do either.
Sure. Follow, she tweets
funny
stuff. What
do you have to say? Yeah, she's kind of funny from time to time.
I think she's funny.
Yeah, I don't. I am someone who is interested in pop culture news, developments, etc. Sure. Art. Chrissy Teigen leaving was one of those things where I'm like, nah, she'll be back. And yeah, 22 days later, she's back. I'm not pro Chrissy Teigen. I'm not anti Chrissy Teigen. I am precisely the person who points out that we're all going nuts being pro and anti Chrissy Teigen.
Sure.
Like it's fine if you go away and you come back, it's cool. But I do think there's a little, you also lose like 2,000 friends at once. A, she's either undercounting or overcounting that. Like how friends are you with them?
I mean, she's like, talking about like people she would reply to or have replied to her. I'm sure. Look, I wanted to cover this for two reasons. One, am I personally invested her? Not like a lot of people, but a little bit, sure. I mean, I had a weird history where she didn't like Bernie. So it's not the sort of person I would generally be all that interested in. But at one point, she followed me, and I don't know why, considering my political tweets. And then at some point she stopped following me. And I find that fascinating. And I wish I knew which tweet it was that led to that, but I don't know. So that was the personal investment. The meta thing though is, it is very hard to leave things like this. Like there are times where I would love to leave, but how could I possibly do that? The career stuff and all that, and for her too, like my career stuff is political Twitter, career stuff is like promoting projects or John Legend or whatever. Like it is very difficult, but the thing that made her leave is still there. And it is as sanity grinding for all of us, I think, or at least the vast majority of us.
There are certain, there are definitely certain news items and people that reveal to me how horrible I am. Chrissy Teigen's one of them. Like okay. Chrissy Teigen reveals to me how horrible I am because that last tweet of hers is everything right and wrong with Twitter. I choose, like, after much thought, independent, internal reflection, I've determined philosophically, I choose to platitude, a platitude, a platitude. I choose okay. to take the bad with the good. And it's that most people like the office poster that says, hang in there.
Uh-huh.
That's it. That's all people are here for. And while I sit there, and again, this is a reflection solely on how terrible I am, where I'm like, I'm gonna make the perfect point on. I'm gonna make the perfect point on Twitter. It's gonna be flawless. I'm gonna I'm gonna figure out where everybody's at and say something that'll really create this like giant either catharsis or insight. But really, yeah. What most people are just looking for in their daily life is someone like Chrissy Teigen to say, you know what I've decided, and I might be the first person ever to say this. I choose to take the bad with the good.
Okay. And you have now crossed over from neutral on Chrissy Teigen to anti-Chrissy Teigen. I'm putting you in that category.
I try to be neutral on Chrissy Teigen. And the reason that I say I point out that people are getting too passionate about it is that I myself get too passionate about it. And like, oh, Chrissy, are you okay? How's your mental health? Is everything going well before you put down the phone and go back to your bubble bathroom? Like,
I understand. Yes. Okay. Okay, we have found out that you are neutral to Chrissy Teigen the way I am neutral to the royal family. It just takes the right update. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, it is a very trashy week, Brett. I think we can all agree. That said, I have decided to go in a different direction with my garbage person. I'm not making it super serious. It has to do with expectations being crushed by someone that I should have known would have crushed these expectations, because my garbage person, although I don't have the paper because my printer toner ran out, is Elon Musk. Because Elon Musk promised us a lot. And in particular, he promised us awesome tunnels, I guess, if a tunnel could be awesome. But it was left vague, and so our imagination was able to run wild. He, for instance, promised us a Vegas tunnel, the first commercial application of what Musk has dubbed Loop, defined by the Boring Company's website as a quote, high-speed underground public transportation system in which passengers are transported via compatible autonomous electric vehicles at up to 155 miles per hour, which sounds like something from Minority Report or iRobot. And in fact, it looked like that. If you look at the early images they put out, yeah, you get in these autonomous electric vehicles, it zips you super fast through these tunnels. You can take a look at it. It literally looks like one of the cars from Minority Report when you zoom in. And I got excited for that, for Vegas and what it could potentially do for Vegas or for LA as well. And then they showed some footage because Kylie Jenner got to experience the Vegas tunnel, and here is what it looks like.
A major adventure. Shotgun. This is crazy. I'm big. Oh my god.
Man, all you need is
put your seatbelt on.
All you need is 818. And this is a ride.
Are we going to a different dimension?
I feel like we're going to the future.
So good, you guys.
That's, is it?
What? What are your thoughts?
Not that different from what? A tunnel, like
it turns out it's a tunnel.
But like, what?
I guess, am I the villain that I expected a tunnel to be more interesting than just, no, they just carved a shockingly tiny hole in the ground. Like, if your car, because they're in, I think it's a Tesla Model X, yeah. Like, can you even open the doors once you're in that? Like, what happens if the cars break down? What if they get in an accident? Like, there's no room.
Yeah,
it's just a tiny tunnel that he put Twitch streamer lights in. He hooked it up with RGB and that's it. It's a Twitch background.
What would life be like inside a glow stick? Now we know, Elon Musk.
I think I'm tripping. And okay, the villain is Elon Musk. It's not Kylie Jenner, but Kylie Jenner saying, are we going to another dimension? Have you seen colored light before? Because it seems like this is the first time. Like, it's, yeah, there's lights.
So Kylie, here's $80 bajillion for your appearance on your way to another appearance for which you'll get $80 bajillion before staying in a hotel for which you will be, if you document it on the same account, will receive $80 bajillion. This is fine because like he does have an autonomous vehicle. This is
an autonomous electric vehicle, but it ain't like the one he showed.
This is like when there's an essay question and you like technically answer it correctly, but the teacher was asking for more information. You know, like yes, you know what is this? What is the country north of Cuba? And the answer is you know, or what is the state north of Cuba? And the answer is Florida, because I didn't ask what's 90 miles to the northeast, and you answered Maine. And yes, that is north of Cuba.
That's like, and that is so Elon Musk to do.
Yeah.
Over like he technically, like I just, it's just such a waste. God, why did I invest myself? And I've invested myself in Hyperloop more. So, you know, God only knows, I can't wait until he's going back in here for that eventually. But it's just a tunnel. It's got some lights. Hooray, it cost a bajillion dollars.
And the different, yeah. And so this is just a tunnel. It is no different. So, and that's what Vegas is all about. That's why it's in Vegas. Like you realize you're not in the Luxor. You're in a hotel called the Luxor that's the shape of a pyramid. You realize it's not Paris. You're in a hotel that is meant to look like Paris.
I do like that one though. Yeah, as people are pointing out.
This is the ceiling in it.
So now people have gotten ahead of my reference. So someone is like, the tunnels in Fast and Furious were better. And I thought he just ripped this off of Willy Wonka. That's all it is. It's the boat in Willy Wonka, except you don't even get the boat and there's no chocolate.
It's so dumb. Brett, like also like to get around Vegas, don't you want to like see Vegas?
Yeah, well, you see lights. I guess that's one of the appealing parts of Vegas.
So my garbage person of the week is the Florida State Legislature. And the reason I'm saying it's the entire Florida State Legislature, it's because there's definitely people within that legislature that want me to name them specifically, but I'm not gonna give them the pleasure because they wanna say they trigger the libs the most. The GOP-led Florida House of Representatives on Wednesday voted 70-44 along party lines in a very, I love that it's 70-44 is party lines when, by the way, like whenever they vote in the general election, it's much closer than that. But anyways, to pass HB 1475, which would ban transgender female athletes from competing on women's athletic teams in both high school and college, while subjecting some student athletes to quote, genital inspections before they can play. So there's multiple ways. So they want to be like, we're the good guys here. We're the good guys. But at the end of the day, they're the same people who are like, show me your gonads, lady. Whip it out, 14-year-old. That's their thing. You are a garbage person. You can't have the moral high ground when your plan is for teenagers to have to show you their junk.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what else, anything else going on. You've lost. And you're in trouble too, Brett. These people are in trouble because I don't know if they know, but there's a nationwide movement opposing sex predators targeting kids. Wait until they find out about this. They're gonna be all over those Republicans.
And like in a landscape that's plagued with abuse allegations as doctors performing physicals in women's sports to see Larry Nassar. Like, do you wanna add more to that? They do. And talk about government overreach, regulator overreach. You're reaching into the pants of a teenager.
Yeah.
You psychopaths. Middle school.
It's just madness. How could this be your priority? How could this be the solution if this issue is your priority? How could this be your response to losing so many elections that this is all the Republicans have nationwide is voter suppression and anti-trans bills. As we talked about in the pre-show, 70% of Republicans in a poll that just came out are against these sorts of bills. 70% of Republican voters are against these, and this is all they've got.
Yep,
it is disgusting.
Oh, but they're going to be treat men and women equally, men's sports and women's sports as conventionally understood and outlined equally. No. Student athletes born biological females may still compete on male or female teams. So there's a double standard there. And then when asked, some guy in this Florida state legislature said, boys and men are faster than and stronger than women. That's just genetics and that's just science. We're not targeting LGBT community and we're not targeting the trans community. No, yes, you are. You're just asking them to show you their junk. We're just, that's in my mind, we're protecting women's access to sports. Show that is me.
A great garbage person, Brett.
Yeah. Show me where this it is. They're overrun by people pretending to be women so they can. You know, score more goals. It's not a problem. It's a, you know, they're all culture warriors. And that's my report. Brett Ehrlich, your culture war correspondent.
Thank you, Brett, presenting from the front. Great garbage person. But we have one more, and that is the community garbage person. We had 11,000 votes. I forgot to remind you on Thursday's show, so I apologize for the lower numbers there. But coming in at number 5 with 2% of the vote is Jesse Waters for only caring about issues once they affect him. Number 4 this week with 7% of the vote is John Boehner for waiting until he was out of power to attack the GOP. Number 3 with 8% of the vote, Tennessee's governor for signing a law not requiring gun permits. Number 2, we have Pete Hegseth with 29% of the vote for blaming Dante Wright for his own death, Jesus. But number 1 with the majority, 53% of the vote, Tucker Carlson for spreading vaccine conspiracy theories. I would say the worst vaccine conspiracy theories, worse than normal anti-vax vaccine conspiracy theories. He very much deserves his spot there. So thank you to everyone who voted. I want to read one super chat before we end. Copper Queen says, hey, Dragon Daddy. Copper Dragon reporting in. It's my second birthday in quarantine. I'm turning 22. Can I get a happy birthday from you and Brett? Well, I can only promise half of it, but happy birthday, Copper Queen.
I'll allow it. Happy birthday, Copper Queen.
Very nice of you, Brett. Brett, as always, thank you very much for joining us on the show. A pleasure to have you here.
Great to be here, John.
You're the best. And thank you everyone for watching us both today and throughout this week. Really appreciate you being here. Lots planned, obviously, for next week, including our Earth Day special coming up next Thursday. And so if you'd like to see more of me, you've got that opportunity in just a few hours. I'm going to be leading the first hour of the Young Turks with Cenk Uygur and Bridget Todd in just a few hours. And then, of course, we're going to have an awesome second hour as well. But until then, stay safe out there, stay sane out there, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.